Okay, the time is now 10 a.m. on March 19th, 2018. We will begin the public meeting of the District of Columbia Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. My name is Tamika Collier. I am here with Shamari Wade, Norma Hutchison, and for the first time on this side of the dais, Darren Sobin. Good morning. Before we start, I want to thank both offices for accommodating the board schedule and moving this meeting to today. We should be back on our regular schedule for next month. Four of the sitting board members are here, so we do have a quorum. I would ask everyone to take a look at the agenda to see if you have any changes. Pending no changes, I ask for a motion to approve the agenda.
I move to approve the agenda.
Second.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Right. Moving to section three, adoption of the agenda meetings from 2017. Rather than take them one by one, I'm going to give the board members a few minutes to look over these meeting minutes for any changes, and we can vote on approval as a block. I will note that for the January 5th, 2017 meeting minute, there's a reference to Chairman Collier. That should be Chairperson Spagnoletti. Do you have any questions or other changes?
None for me.
None? All right, then I move that we adopt the meeting minutes from January through December 2017.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. We can do that now.
Okay.
What about January and February 2018?
They'll be ready for the next meeting.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
I see Mr. French in the audience, and so he doesn't have to sit through the whole meeting. If I could ask your indulgence and we could move to his matter now, just so we can get him on his way. Can we transition to that?
Sure. Madam Chair, I'll just ask that on the agenda, it be noted that the order has been changed.
Yes. All right, this is matter 1641-001 in re R. French. This is an appeal by Mr. French of a ministerial fine in the amount of $600 imposed by the Office of Government Ethics as a result of failure to timely file the confidential financial disclosure statements for, I believe it's years 2015 and 2016.
2016 and 2017.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Board Chairperson Collier. Did you guys want me
to go, or would you like to allow Mr. French to say whatever he would like to say in appeal?
If you could outline the basis for the ministerial fine, and then we'll hear from Mr. French.
Absolutely. So in February of 2017, I was tasked with following up on all non-compliant filers for the 2016 filing period. Mr. French was one of those filers, and I began notifying him that he had been noncompliant. In the course of me notifying him about his noncompliance, he again became noncompliant for the 2017 filing year. So I began updating my notifications and letting him know that he failed to file two forms. Mr. French is classified as a confidential filer under Section 225 of the Ethics Act, and he was designated as a confidential filer by his ethics counselor. He works for the Department of Transportation, and because of his work duties, he was classified as a confidential filer. And so he, at the time that he filed both of his forms, I believe it was November 2017, he was 18 months and 6 months late in filing those two outstanding forms.
Okay, thank you. Mr. French?
Yes, thank you for seeing me early. I was fined not $600, but $900. $300 had already been garnished from my paycheck, and I was told that another $600 would come out for 2 years' worth of files. I was also told that because of my status, these disclosure forms were more so for managers. I'm not in a position to steal or cheat. I have managers and supervisors that oversee my work. I was told, maybe I was ill-informed, that this has to do with someone in power, managers, supervisors. I made a mistake. I didn't fill it out. I apologize to the board. I did fill it out. It was late. That's correct. I have certain questions, though. In my case file, it says this is not my job description. I don't know if the board is familiar with what I was given. And from Ms. Asia.
I believe Mr. French is referring to the notice of violation that was served on him in September and then served on him again in, I believe, November of 2017.
Stated in the form that I work for DDOE. I do not work for DDOE. This is not my job description at all. And again, I apologize for filing late. It won't happen again. I don't feel I should be fined $900. I was told $300 per year, and I've already been garnished $300 already. And won't happen again. Thank you.
What information do you have that Mr. French was actually designated and advised of his status as a confidential financial disclosure filer?
So in the course of my enforcement action of notifying the non-compliant filers for 2016 and 2017, I contacted Mr. French's, his agency's ethics counselor. His name is Glenn Dubin, and I asked him to send over any records that he had of the designation notifications that he sent out to confidential filers, and he did forward those emails to me on April 18th, 2016, and April 18th, 2017. A mass email was sent out to confidential filers to let them know of their responsibility to file, and Mr. French was included in those emails.
Okay, board members, do you have any questions?
I don't have any questions. I don't have any questions.
Did the board need me to respond to any of Mr.
You can.
Okay. So I don't know if everybody had an opportunity to review. So I included in the Dropbox Mr. French's some of the comments that he had in reference to his appeal, and I also responded to Mr. French. We decided to respond to Mr. French via email so that I could include a couple links to the rules so that he would be able to refer to the rules if he needed to. And so I just want to really quickly go through our response to some of his comments on the appeal, which is some of the things that he mentioned here today. So First, from the initial writings that we received from Mr. French by email, it was a little bit unclear whether he understood that the scope of this matter before the board was limited to the ministerial fines. There was some language in some of his emails with regard to his actual designation. So I just wanted to clarify that the actual designation, his first designation happened almost 2 years ago, and then his designation was almost a year ago. And so those matters should have been resolved within 5 days of him being notified, and that would be the April 18th emails that he was sent for each year. Within 5 days of those notifications, he should have appealed his designation, which he failed to do 2 consecutive years. And so that's not one of the issues that I don't think that we should be discussing today. So I just wanted to clarify that. And then Mr. French also took issue with the notice of violation. As he mentioned, there may have been some reference to DDOE in the notice of violation. And I just wanted to, you know, present to the board that at that time I was doing maybe 30 draft notice of violation. So there may have been some people from DDOE, but that on the whole, the notice of violation is accurate, and that it was, you know, a small error, and that that error did not deprive Mr. French of any of his, you know, administrative rights with regard to being able to appeal this matter. And so we don't think that it is a relevant issue in this appeal. And excuse me, sorry, the board's indulgence.
It's okay.
Oh, another important issue that we wanted to bring up is that at the time that Mr. French began communicating with us, he was 666 days past the date which he was supposed to have appealed his designation for the first designation, and he was 302 days past the time when he should have appealed his second designation. So again, I just wanted to shore up that point that designation is not the issue here. With regard to the $600 fine, Mr. French is correct that he was initially fined $300. I believe he satisfied that fine on November 9th, 2017. That's when the $300 was garnished from his paycheck. But we felt that in this matter, his failure to comply with his filing requirements were so egregious that we should increase the ministerial fine from $300 to $600. And when we were in talks to make this decision, we still hadn't received the form from Mr. French. Mr. French filed his form, I believe, November 6, 2017. He filed both forms. And so in the interim, we were talking, trying to figure out how do we get Mr. French to comply. This is going on a really long time. Even since I was given this matter, which was February of last year, it's been over a year now of this ongoing matter. So we just felt that this particular case was so egregious that the ministerial fine should be increased from $300 to $600. And I think that's about it.
Thank you. Stuart Mitchell.
Can I interject?
Sure.
For me, the verbiage has always been DDOE, and that's where I always got hung up at. I don't work for DDOE. I felt I didn't need to fill out the forms. I get 100 emails a day. I apologize for not being in compliance. But again, verbiage is everything to me, and if I don't work for an agency, I don't feel I need to fill out that forms, that agency's forms. I work for DDOT.
Excuse me, I just want to respond to that really quickly. So I just want to go on record as saying that the Department of Energy was mentioned exactly one time throughout this entire process, and that's one typographical error that occurred in the notice of violation. Also in the notice of violation, his proper current agency, DDOT, was mentioned several times. And so, again, I don't know how Mr. French could come under the impression that we were thought that he was a Rashawn French, I guess, from the Department of Energy. I just want to clarify that that's incorrect, and I apologize for the typographical error, but that happened exactly one time, and I've been trying to reach out and resolve this for over a year, and all that time I never referred to him having worked for the Department of Energy except for the error in the notice of violation.
Right. And Mr. French, the notice of violation came after you were well past the time in which you were supposed to file both your financial disclosure statements. And if I understand from Ms. Stuart Mitchell, and I have not heard you in any way refute is that you were on notice from your ethics counselor within your agency that you had an obligation to fine. So unless there are further comments from the parties or questions from the board, then we will take a vote. All in favor of upholding the office's ministerial fine in the amount of $600 to Mr. French for failure to file his confidential financial disclosure statements, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Mr. French, we have upheld the fine in the amount of $600. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Sorry, is that 600 total or 600 more?
Your ministerial fine is $600. You have already been assessed a late penalty for the first year in the amount of $300.
Thank you.
Thank you. Director Hughes, thank you for indulging us with this. Willie, your update now.
Litigation. The Mayor's Advisory Commission on Caribbean Community Affairs on March 2, 2018, Attorney Barton and I appeared before Judge Campbell to conclude the Office of Open Government's litigation against Michael Yates in his capacity as Chairman of the Mayor's Advisory Commission on Caribbean Community Affairs. Judge Campbell agreed with OOG's position that the office, as part of its enforcement authority, may seek additional notice of MACA to ensure compliance with the Open Meetings Act. Although the Office of Open Government asked for 2 weeks advance notice of all MACA meetings and for mandatory publication on the OOG central calendar for 1 year, the judge ordered that MACA provide 1 week advance notice to OOG and publish all meetings, agendas, and related materials on the central calendar for 1 year. We did consent at the request of the Office of the Attorney General last week to clarify the judge's order to make clear that it was a year's compliance for not only the advance notice, but also publication on the central calendar. But that is the position of the court. It was just worded a bit oddly. United Medical Center Board. As this board is aware, the Office of Open Government issued a binding opinion to the United Medical Center Not-for-Profit Hospital Board on January 26, requiring the board to publish the closed portion of a December 13th meeting in which the board deliberated upon and voted to close the hospital's obstetrics unit. Wisely, the chair of the board relented on her position to sue the Office of Open Government to block publication of the recording at the request of Councilmember Allen. The United Medical Center Board published the full recording of the closed session on the UMC website on March 6, 2018. Counsel to the board redacted those portions of the recording in which he was providing advice to the board. The Commission on the Selection and Tenure of Administrative Law Judges remains out of compliance with the findings of the October 30, 2017 opinion in which the Office of Open Government found numerous violations of the Open Meetings Act. Namely, the members of the COST have not been trained in the requirements of the Open Meetings Act and have not backposted on the Office of Administrative Hearings website or on the central calendar all meeting minutes and audio files of meetings dating back to November 2014. Attorney Barton has contacted the COST to arrange a training date. We have not yet heard as to when that training will occur. I contacted Chief Judge Adams on March 6th to inquire as to when the COST would comply with the publication requirement. There has been no reply to my request, and OOG is still awaiting word, as I mentioned, on the training date. Meanwhile, the Office of Administrative Hearings General Counsel on February 16th submitted to the Office of Open Government's general inbox a FOIA request for all records reviewed in connection with the OOG's investigation of the OMA complaint giving rise to the October 30th opinion. The request was sent in a manner contrary to specific instruction on the OOG website directing requests to be submitted through the online portal and or submitted to tracy.hughes@dc.gov. I therefore did not begin processing the request until counsel for OAH inquired about the status of the request via my direct inbox on March 14th. The request is now being timely processed as of March 14th. Just a note, I have reached out to Councilmember Mendelson Just to briefly inform him that the cost remains legally out of compliance with the Open Meetings Act. The cost has still yet to address any of the factual findings in the opinion, and I'm certain at this point, barring some small miracle, that the cost will remain out of compliance after my departure on April 22nd. That meeting has not been set up yet. Legislation. The Office of Open Government, at the request of Councilmember Gray, provided input on emergency and temporary legislation making it mandatory for all public bodies to store electronic records for a minimum of 5 years. Councilmember Gray, during the council hearing on March 6, 2018, thanked the OOG on the record for its input into the measures. Outreach. On February 21st, I moderated a panel on the impact of community activism on policing in D.C. The panel was sponsored by the D.C. Affairs Community of the D.C. Bar and was held at Errant Fox. Panelists included Monica Hopkins Maxwell, Executive Director of the ACLU D.C. office, community activist Eugene Purrier, Michael Tobin, Executive Director of the Office of Police Complaints, and Jennifer Ubiera, Fellow for Law for Black Lives D.C. On March 6th, I was invited to participate in a Biga community meeting, and my thanks to the Ethics Office for the invitation, held at Turkey Thicket. It was a community meeting intended to inform attendees about Biga overall, and specifically my charge was to inform the audience about the role of the Office of Open Government. The week of March 12th was Sunshine Week. I was invited to speak to attendees of the Open Government Coalition Summit held at the American Bar Association. To answer questions about the Office of Open Government. The event was sponsored by the Open Government Coalition, the American University of School of Communications, and the Society of Professional Journalists. Other presenters at the event included Barney Krukoff, Interim Chief Information Officer at the Office of the Chief Technology Office, who discussed the city's launch of the data portal, which now contains agency data, including that of Biga. This launch was in direct relationship to the mayor's order directing the implementation of the data policy. As part of the Office of Open Government's longstanding relationship with the OpenGov Hub, I've been asked to host a delegation of mayors from the country of Albania on March 22nd. I will discuss with the delegation the Office of Open Government and its initiatives, and I will also conduct a short presentation on the Open Meetings Act. The OpenGov Hub did forward along with the finalization of that invitation, a letter of invitation to the mayor, which I had forwarded to her office, inviting the mayor or her designee to attend. Trainings and advisory opinions. Since the last meeting of the board, the Office of Open Government has conducted 9 requests for FOIA advice and 7 requests for OMA advice. The office conducted 5 Open Meetings Act trainings and 2 FOIA trainings. We have also resolved 2 Open Meetings Act complaints. And that concludes my update.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The report by the Director of Government Ethics, update on our operations. During the preceding month, we opened 13 new investigations. We currently have a caseload of 26 open investigations, which is a dramatic increase from the 8 that we had open last month. It just goes to show the unpredictability of our operations when you just never know something's going to break in the media and cause us to get involved in certain activities. We also have 8 cases that are currently inactive and stayed. One is a fugitive from a court. One is pending appeal before the OEA. 4 are pending because of related investigations being conducted by the Office of the Inspector General. And 2 are pending Civil False Claims Act with the Office of the Attorney General. Regarding our publication and reporting obligations, we have no outstanding publication or reporting obligations at this time. Our most recent quarterly complaint report was posted to the website, and our agency performance measures were completed and uploaded into the City Administrator's QuickBase database. Trainings and outreach.
How'd we do on the performance plan?
Yeah, I believe that we are in compliant. We have met our performance expectations that were predicted, and we're looking at possibly tweaking our performance measures for the next fiscal year.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. trainings, outreach attended by staff. As reported at the last meeting, all Vegas staff have completed the online training course, Sexual Harassment Prevention for Employees, as outlined in Mayor's Order 2017-313 that was issued on December 19, 2017, and Senior Attorney Advisor Grimaldi attended an ADA training session. On Wednesday, March 21st, Attorney Advisor Ashley Cooks and I will participate in an online presentation regarding GoToWebinar and GoToTraining. GoToWebinar is a platform businesses and sole proprietors can use to create and deliver online video conferences with their clients, and GoToTraining is a web-hosted online training service which contains an online classroom and desktop sharing software that enables the user to present their screen to other trainees and students via the internet in real time. We will be able to record our training programs and make them available for future viewing online as well. After researching several similar options like WebEx and Adobe Connect, we believe that the GoToWebinar and GoToTraining options give us the most bang for the buck. And we plan to begin using this software in April to expand our training reach and make it even easier for district employees to complete their ethics training. I used the GoToMeeting products in my last job, and they were very, very easy to use. And I believe Ashley has had outreach from what's the agency that wants us to do trainings next month? One of the district agencies asked us to conduct a block of four trainings, I believe. DPR. And being able to do this over the internet should really make it a lot easier for us to accommodate as many employees as they want. And they wouldn't have to come here. It's just a matter of convenience more than anything.
So is it like a simulcast, a webcast?
Yeah, it's live. It's just like they can either communicate through their computer microphone and speakers or just call in and participate over the phone. And there's a in the dialogue box, there's just a red button to hit for record, and you can record every session that you you conduct.
Yep. May I add something, please? Just for your consideration, the agency has a paid subscription to WebEx.
Oh, okay.
I would prefer GoToMeeting as well, but just to let you know for the record, we do have this option available through the service that we're currently using.
Okay.
So that's just an FYI.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That actually was my question, is making sure that the two offices were talking about it, because it is a type of functionality that both offices could benefit from.
Sounds good. Trainings conducted by our staff. Since the date of our last meeting, we conducted 14 training sessions, which is slightly more than we conducted during the previous month. The trainings consisted of four new employee orientations, four MSS presentations, two FDS presentations, two board and commission trainings, one donations management training, and one ethics training at HBX. We also conducted two Vega Roadshow presentations since the board's last meeting. The first one took place at the February 28th meeting of Advisory Neighborhood Commission 5A, which was held at Trinity College. And the second presentation, in which OGE was joined by OOG, was for the North Michigan Park Citizens Association and took place on March 6th at the Turkey Thick Recreational Center. Attendees at both presentations were eager to hear about Vega, and we received good feedback, and we plan to continue having engaging in additional community outreach efforts moving forward. Advisory opinions, advice, informal advice. We issued approximately 90 informal advisory opinions, slightly down from the 100 reported at the last meeting. The last meeting totals included advice related to the lobbyist filing deadline, and this month's totals include two additional weeks due to the rescheduling of the board's meeting. Formal advice requests, we issued one formal advisory opinion, number 1687-001, meet and greet advisory opinion. The subject matter of that opinion is permissible activities involving hosting quote-unquote meet and greets, not fundraisers, for partisan political candidates under the District of Columbia Hatch Act, ethics laws, or election expenditure laws. The requester also sent a request for opinions from the Office of Campaign Finance.
Do you know if they responded to the request?
I do not. And related to both the advisory opinions, informal and formal, we have been working with WADA to possibly develop a database of those opinions, similar to the database that OOG has. He met with us and did some requirements discussions, and we're continuing to move in that direction so that we would have one repository for all of the opinions that we've issued, hopefully make it easier for us to go back and make sure that the opinions we're extending now are consistent with what we've said in the past. And that would involve just keeping track of all of the calls that we get. And I think it will provide greater granularity when we go to council to show what we do above and beyond our investigations, to have hard, concrete statistics to show also the nature of the calls that we're getting. Are they coming from district employees? Are they coming from taxpayers? Are they FDS related? Are they lobbyists? Or are they general in nature? So we're optimistic that at some point between now and the end of the fiscal year that that will be operational.
We're talking about the informal advice?
We're planning on putting everything in there. It would be informal advice, formal advice, and just general communications, just logs. You know, sometimes people may say that they contacted us to criticize or reach out for information, and we don't really have any documentation to show whether that may be accurate or not. So the thought is to have this database keep track of everything.
So, but with the formal opinions, they're on the website and they're searchable, right?
True.
Currently, and
yes.
It works? Okay.
Ethics legislation, comprehensive code of conduct. We are not aware of any recent developments with regard to ethics legislation or the CCC. Rulemaking. In the Dropbox, you will find a draft rulemaking to adopt procedures for informal show cause hearings to be used in conjunction with our ministerial schedule of fines, which was largely based on the procedures enacted by OCF for similar purposes. We have also included with that draft a revised schedule of fines that specifically includes references to the statutory or regulatory provisions for which each such fine could be imposed. Budget. Our performance oversight hearing was held on Thursday, February 8th. We have no reporting obligations resulting from that hearing. We have continued to hold monthly budget meetings, and we are formulating a response to the notice we recently received from the mayor's office proposing to channel some of OGE's fiscal 2019 funding to other purposes.
Are we talking about the OTIP funds there?
Yes. We recently ordered 7 new laptops and docking stations to replace a portion of the aging computers our staff has been using in most instances since 2012. New laptops for the remaining staff members will be purchased either later in fiscal 2018 or at the beginning of fiscal 2019 based on whether we will have sufficient funds available to accomplish that initiative during the current fiscal year. We are also working with a potential vendor to conduct a trial demo of a new case management software system called Scout that is also being purchased by DCDMV. However, the vendor has asked us to provide documentation better outlining our operational processes so that the trial demo version of the software can be configured as closely as possible to how we operate in the real world. Because different agencies have different terminology, different processes, and they can configure the system to basically mirror your operational processes. And the thought is we'll be better able to evaluate the usefulness of the system if it is more consistent with how we operate. The OIG was kind enough to share some of the policies and procedures it currently has in place to govern its investigative and auditing functions, as has the Office of Campaign Finance, and we are currently reviewing those documents with an eye toward hammering out similar policies and procedures on our own. Once those policies and procedures are finalized, we will work with the vendor on next steps to begin the case management system demo. We hope to acquire a new case management system by the end of fiscal 18, if at all possible.
I would just offer a word of caution, having just experienced the new association management system. Vendors will tell you that everything is portable over from the old system.
Yep.
And it almost never is.
Yep.
So I would, when you're negotiating these terms, I'd be very careful to put some guarantees in the contract that they can stand behind their work.
Yeah, absolutely. The data migration of any legacy data from an existing system is always something that is fraught with difficulty. So we want to make sure that we pay particular attention to that. Thank you. Staffing. We have two positions to fill, and we have been working with DCHR to get the new program specialist position description approved and posted. DCHR has suggested that we consider using compliance specialist, that title for our position, based on the duty set forth in the draft description I shared with the board prior to our last meeting. So we're still trying to iron out exactly which title to use, and also some of the they have some questions about some of the requirements that we have in there. So Sandra has been working closely with them and keeping me in the loop as to progress. And I'm also finalizing the position description for our new investigative auditor position, which is based on position descriptions I found that are being used by the City of Philadelphia and the State of California for positions with similar responsibilities. And I hope to have it approved by DCR and DCHR and posted within the next 30 days. Litigation. In addition to the case previously discussed by the Director of the Office of Open Government, we are aware of at least five other pending cases. Garen Price, D.C. Court of Appeals. Mr. Price appealed the board's findings that he violated the DPM's nepotism provisions to the D.C. Court of Appeals. Following a series of extensions, Mr. Price has filed his brief. The government's brief is due on Tuesday, March 20th, which is tomorrow. We are reviewing that pleading and will provide our comments to OAG by the close of business today. Charlene Dickens, D.C. Court of Appeals. Ms. Dickens is one of two DDOT employees who appealed their designations as public filers. Her petition was dismissed by the Court of Appeals on March 2nd. Edwin Adokwe, D.C. Superior Court. In a similar case, Mr. Adokwe filed his brief in Superior Court on August 21st, and OAG filed its reply brief in early October. The dismissal of his petition was announced by Judge Holman on February 9, 2018, although OAG is awaiting the final order from Chambers to affirm the board's ruling. We will be considering our next steps in these cases. Fifth case is Larry Hicks, D.C. Superior Court. This is an enforcement collection action filed to reduce the board's $20,000 fine imposed on Mr. Hicks to judgment. The board imposed the fine in February of 2014, and Mr. Hicks appealed that finding to the Superior Court and Court of Appeals. With his judicial remedies exhausted, a hearing is now set on this matter for February 8, 2018. The Office of the Attorney General has asked Vega to provide a representative to authenticate the board's order if necessary. Mr. Grimaldi will be available to appear for that purpose. Do we know if that hearing has been rescheduled?
Let me jump in. Yeah, it's been continued to April 2nd. I did appear with an assistant attorney general on February 8th and judge in chambers, and the judge determined correctly that Mr. Hicks had not been served. So continued it, and I understand from the assistant attorney general that Mr. Hicks has now been served, and the new date is set for Monday, April 2, and I will appear.
Thank you, Mr. Grimaldi. Last case is Claudia Barber versus Vega/OOG, D.C. Superior Court. This is a case filed on February 9, 2018, challenging an opinion issued by the Office of Open Government, concluding that OOG had no authority to independently nullify actions taken during meetings of public bodies. The OAG has filed a motion to dismiss this case on the basis that the OOG decision was issued under the authority of the Open Meetings Act, part of the APA, and not under the Comprehensive Merit Personnel Act, the statute under which this lawsuit was classified by the court.
Will you send me a copy of that motion to dismiss?
Sure.
Thank you. It's in the drop.
I have.
Will do. Lobbyist financial disclosure matters. Public financial disclosure statements for calendar year 2017. We are still working to ensure that all non-compliant public financial disclosure statement filers file their forms via our e-filing system. For the 2018 financial disclosure season, we have begun the early stages of preparation for that season. On Monday, February 12, 2018, and Tuesday, February 13th, we held our annual financial disclosure training for ethics counselors. All filer lists were due to OGE on March 1st, and to date, we have received 85 of the 102 public lists due and 71 of the 102 confidential lists due to us. We are currently in the process of contacting the ethics counselors responsible for the outstanding lists and asking them to submit those lists immediately. If they fail to do so by the end of this week, we will begin looping their respective agency heads into our conversations in the hopes of expediting compliance.
So this is normally a very heavy lift for the staff this time of year.
Sure.
You're down two positions. How's it going?
So far, so good. I know that Asia is concerned about the amount of time that it's taking her to get this compliance, which is why I've offered to get personally involved in the discussions with the agency heads, because it's just been my experience, human nature, when things get elevated up the chain of command, you tend to get a little bit quicker response.
Yep.
Lobbyists. Our auditor is in the process of reviewing the January 2018 lobbyist activity report filings. Total LAR filings being reviewed are 405 records. The auditor recommended to me that all lobbyists claiming 503c3 status and receiving $200 credit on their registration fees should be verified to ensure that we are giving the credit to those who truly meet the 503c3 designation. Upon research, the auditor has identified a database on the IRS website where 503c3 organizations can be verified by entering their employer identification number, or EIN. At the moment, we have identified 78 organizations claiming 503c3 status to be audited, and there may be additional organizations as we go through the January 2018 desk review process. The board will be updated on the auditor's findings during the next board meeting. Next, we come to non-confidential investigations. The first item on the agenda, Mr. French's case, has already been moved up on the agenda and dealt with. We appreciate the board's decision to uphold our ministerial fines. Greatly appreciated. The next case is Rochelle Wilson, 1634-001. This is a formal investigation that we discussed at the last meeting involving a former Aussie employee who, before her separation from the district government, failed to submit full, accurate, and complete financial disclosure forms for three consecutive years. She omitted several organizations and businesses that she had affiliations with or interests in. And the negotiations for an attempt to negotiate disposition were unsuccessful. And we believe that this is an appropriate case for the director to impose a ministerial fine. We have given some thought as to the process that should be used, which led us to draft the new proposed regulations that will govern our informal hearing process. We look to the Office of Campaign Finance as a model, and our draft regulations and our preferred way to proceed with Ms. Wilson would be to issue a notice to her to appear at an informal hearing before me as the Director of Government Ethics and show cause why she should not be fined for her willful failure to file accurate FDS reports for three consecutive years. Asia, as the assigned attorney, would be presenting the office's evidence to me. I would listen to whatever evidence or arguments Ms. Wilson might have and then issue a written ministerial fine order if warranted, and she would be provided with notice of the director's findings and a period of time to appeal that to the board. So that's the way the regulations are spelled out, and that's the approach that I would like to take.
Have you considered giving them the option of appearing in person or submitting a response in writing?
Yeah, I don't think we have any problem with either approach. Just looking at the regulations that OCF had, I don't think that they specifically gave the respondent that option to only submit written evidence or to appear. I think it was just to appear. But if the board believes it would be more appropriate for us to specifically give them that option, I mean, that makes sense to me.
I could see how you could get a greater response if some people not wanting to take time off of work, potentially they looking at least two sessions with us, assuming you issue a fine, then they appeal it to us. I would like to give them that option of either a written response or appearing in person. Does anyone else have any comments on that?
I think that makes sense, especially since, you know, the hearing option is there to benefit the respondent. And so they have the right, you know, not to have to appear if they want to do it by written. And it would probably make more sense for the staff,
yep,
too.
Yep, absolutely. We will make that change. I don't know if the board has had a chance to review the proposed regulations, has any thoughts or questions for us. But our plan is to move forward with the ministerial fine process with Ms. Wilson as soon as the board makes a determination regarding the wording of the regulation and authorizes it to be published.
So the you got this model from the Office of Campaign Finance?
Yes.
And do they allow for a written response as opposed to appearing in person?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure that the language we took was probably verbatim from OCF.
That was my only comment.
Okay. Regarding the last matter is Henry Courtney Snowden. This is an investigation referred by the Office of the Inspector General involving the Deputy Mayor for Greater Economic Opportunity. According to the OIG's report of investigation, on three occasions in late summer 2015, Ms. Snowden used government resources for other than official business and ordered, directed, or requested subordinate employees to perform personal services in violation of DPM Section 1807.1B and C. And we have been in communication with Ms. Snowden's attorney attempting to reach a negotiated disposition of that matter.
I'm going to recuse myself from this particular case and put it on the record, since at the time this case was pending, I was on the other side of this dais. And so if there is discussion about it, I'll excuse myself.
So noted.
That's it for me.
Thank you. All right, now we'll have an opportunity for public comment. For the record going forward, we ask public comments be kept to 3 minutes. Seeing no one, and we don't have anyone on the phone, I will now entertain a motion to go to executive session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-575B to consult with an attorney to obtain legal advice and to preserve the attorney-client privilege between an attorney and a public body pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B4A to discuss personnel matters including the appointment, employment, assignment, promotion, performance, evaluation, compensation, discipline, demotion, removal, or resignation of government appointees, employees, or officials pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B10, and to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Official Code Section 2-57B13.
I move that we enter executive session.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The time is now 10:48. We are in executive session. Thank you. All right, the time is now 12:19, and we are back on the public record. We have to report out three matters. First, case number 1031-015, in re Paul Taylor. The Office of Government Ethics has entered into a negotiated disposition with Mr. Taylor, the details of which will be posted on the BEGA website. Next matter, case number 10-31-016, in re Antoine Wilson, and case number 1031-017, in re Jennifer Niles. The board has determined there is reason to believe that a violation of the code of conduct has occurred pursuant to DC Official Code Section 1-1162.12b, and the board has authorized a formal investigation, including the issuance of subpoenas in this matter. The next board meeting will be Thursday, April the 5th, starting at 10 a.m. Time is now 10:21, and that concludes this meeting. Thank you. 12:21.
April what?
Yeah. Well, I didn't.